Welcome to the Global Business Women's Pod, hosted by the Greater Houston Women's Chamber of Commerce. I am Susan Dyson and extremely excited to be your podcast host. In my day job, I am proud to be the CEO, president, and founder of the Chamber. Every Thursday at 6 p.m., we will bring you inspiring stories of women who are leading in the advancement of women and girls. We will take you with us to our premier events. You will meet entrepreneurs, executives, and philanthropists who will empower and inspire you to succeed. So please mark your calendars and join us for the Empowering Global Business Women's Pod, Thursday at 6 p.m. We are extremely excited to welcome Rachel Wilson as a keynote speaker today. Rachel, it says so much about you for taking the time to be with us today. We can only imagine your busy schedule. Rachel is the Managing Director of Morgan Stanley and Head of Wealth Management, Data Security, and Infrastructure Risk. She is responsible for the protection and governance of all sensitive data across wealth management networks, applications, hardware, and users in both physical and digital form. Rachel and her team work to secure data from all manner of loss, theft, or compromise. Her team also manages all forms of infrastructure risk, including technology risk, business continuity, disaster recovery and resiliency, and vendor and third-party risk. I don't know how you get that all on your business card, but you will soon learn that Rachel is the kind of powerful woman they write books about. Prior to joining Morgan Stanley, Rachel spent 15 years at the National Security Agency, or NSA. She ran NSA's counterterrorism operations and led a global enterprise in detecting and disrupting terrorist plotting against the U.S. and its allies. Between 2010 and 2012, Rachel served as NSA's Chief of Operations in the U.K., working out of the U.S. Embassy in London. Returning to the U.S. in 2012, Rachel spent nearly 5 years leading NSA's cyber exploitation operations as a deputy and then chief of remote operations center within NSA's tailored access operations. We are so honored to welcome Rachel Wilson as our keynote speaker today. Let's give her a Houston, Texas welcome.
Susan, thank you so much for that warm introduction. And wonderful women of Houston, it is an absolute pleasure to be joining you virtually today. I cannot wait till a time when we can all be together in person. But again, it is an honor and a pleasure to be joining you in this capacity. As Susan mentioned, I run cybersecurity, data protection, fraud prevention for Morgan Stanley's wealth management business. And what that means is that I and my team are responsible for making sure that we are protecting our clients' data in all forms, that all of our networks, our systems, our applications are as time-tested and battle-hardened as possible before we field them out to the United States and out to the world. And Susan, as you noted, we have been exceedingly busy these past few years. I can tell you, I thought we were busy prior to the pandemic. The pandemic saw a huge increase in attempted cyber attacks. And certainly these last few weeks, months, as we have seen this tragedy unfold in Ukraine, I can tell you from a cybersecurity perspective, certainly this has been an unprecedented time period for all of us. First, by way of background, as Susan mentioned, I've been at Morgan Stanley now for 5 years. And before that, I spent the first 15 years of my career at the National Security Agency. I had a few different jobs there. I certainly ran NSA's counterterrorism operations mission for a couple of years, essentially using technical means to get onto the devices used by terrorists, read their email, listen to their phone calls, geolocate them. Then I spent a couple of years in the UK helping the British get ready for the 2012 Summer Olympics. As you would expect, we had a large number of terrorist plots towards those Olympics, but we had an equally large number of cyber threats. Everything from the Chinese trying to hack into the clocks, the timers at the Olympic venues, the Russians trying to hack into the Olympic drug testing records, which of course makes perfect sense now, made no sense to us at the time. All kinds of miscreants just looking to rub some grit in the eyes of the British leading into those Olympics. I was thrilled to see them go off without a hitch and to return home to suburban Maryland, in which I would share with you ladies, this was returning to my dream job. So NSA lured me back to the United States by offering me the job that I had wanted from the day that I started at the NSA, and that was running the NSA's cyber exploitation operations mission. These are your professional American hackers. We would recruit the best computer scientists, computer engineers we could find all over the country. Obviously, being government, I could not pay them what the Microsofts and Amazons and Googles of the world could offer them, but I could offer them the opportunity to do something that frankly would be illegal anywhere else, to be a professional hacker at the NSA, where of course the Computer Fraud and Abuses Act doesn't apply. And for a particular ilk of young person, this was a very alluring proposition. So we would bring in all of these remarkable folks, we would give them 18 months of highly classified training, and then we would conduct hundreds of operations a day, hacking into the networks of the Russians, the Iranians, the North Koreans, the Chinese, you name it, living in their networks, stealing their secrets, giving them to our policymakers, our warfighters, all with the goal of keeping the United States and her allies safe. And now at Morgan Stanley, none of you will be surprised to hear that my team, largely made up of folks who worked with me and for me at the NSA, bringing all of that practitioner level hacking experience to the defense of all of our systems and networks and applications. And as I mentioned, 2.5 years ago, we thought we were incredibly busy. We were dealing with the North Koreans, who of course are hacking into banks to steal money. We were dealing with the Iranians, who recognize that cyber represents an asymmetric threat, and they were leveraging cyber means to retaliate against economic sanctions and military action. We were dealing with an onslaught of cyber criminal syndicates, traditional organized crime rings that are now using cyber means to conduct cyber crime at a scope, scale, and velocity that frankly boggles the mind from where we were even just a few years ago. During the pandemic, as I mentioned, we saw a huge increase in cybercrime and cyber criminal activities, everything from COVID-related phishing schemes to a raise in business email compromise, where a hacker tries to get into your personal or business email account, reads everything in your sent queue, and then attempts to impersonate you using your email account to send emails to your contacts, trying to initiate money movements, the exchange of personally identifiable information. And now here we are in 2022, and I will tell you, this for me is the year of the three R's. The first, of course, being Russia. Just since the beginning of the year, we have seen a sevenfold increase in the volume of Russian-driven phishing attacks. So I can tell all of you ladies, if under normal circumstances, you are very diligent about not clicking on links or downloading attachments and unsolicited sources, I want you to redouble your diligence in this space. The Russians truly are trying to establish points of presence across the entirety of the United States, pre-position themselves for potential cyber attacks should things continue to escalate. And I don't want any of us to be part of that potential future cyber attack. So certainly going after Ukraine, power grids, certainly going after broader scale access through phishing campaigns. Other caution, of course, we all need to be wary of. The Russians have a long history of using social media as a means of spreading misinformation and disinformation. And we've seen them very, very active in that, actively perpetuating information that is simply untrue through social media channels. All of us need to make sure that we are getting our news from reputable sources and recognizing that what we see in social media is as much an attempt to influence as it is to inform. Lastly, when it comes to Russia, we also need to be aware of what we sadly saw really, really rampant during the pandemic. And this is a rise in cyber-enabled fraud. So at the start of the pandemic, we saw hundreds and hundreds of domains purchased, all with coronavirus, COVID-related names. And these websites all were stood up to look like charities. They were not charities at all. These were simply websites, again, designed to look like charities with the intent of stealing your credit card information, your banking credentials, stealing your money. We had no idea that any of us had become victims of fraud course, until it comes time to file that tax return. And we find out that money didn't go to a charity. It went to a fraudster overseas. Now, no surprise, we're seeing exactly the same phenomenon around supporting Ukrainian refugees. A huge number of fraudulent charities, again, not charities at all stood up to take advantage of the many of us that want to do the right thing and help these suffering people in their time of need, making sure that when we give away our hard-earned money, we're doing so in a way that is going to charities that are reputable and verifiable. Second R for 2022 is all about ransomware. You go back 2 years ago, we thought we had a significant ransomware problem globally. I can tell you, we all underestimated just what a force of nature ransomware was going to become. Now, ransomware, of course, is where a hacker gets into your network, your system, maybe through a phishing email, maybe through an unpatched vulnerability. Once they have access, they will then irrevocably encrypt whatever data you value most and hold it for ransom. But what's changed over the last few years is now these ransomware attacks are actually triple extortion scams. So the way this works, the hacker gets in and the first thing they determine is what you corporately or as an individual would most want to avoid having disclosed on the dark web. So for a company, that might be your sensitive business information, your proprietary information. It might be the personally identifiable information of your customers, your client base. On an individual level, this could be sensitive family photos, personal banking and tax information, anything that you would want to avoid having sold on the dark web. The hacker is going to come in and steal that information that you value. The next thing they're going to do is encrypt your systems so that you cannot access your production environment, you cannot conduct your business activities. That's when you'll get the call. And the first round of extortion is a ransom in exchange for not selling that sensitive data on the dark web. Now, this may be, integrity amongst thieves. You can take this promise for what you will, but that is what they will offer, is they will explain to you the data they've stolen, and they will offer to keep it safe, not to expose it on the dark web if you pay this first ransom. The second extortion aspect of this, the second ransom that they'll ask for, is to give you your systems back. So to unencrypt your production environment, your critical database, your operating system, such that your business can continue to operate again. But here's the kicker. What is the triple aspect of this extortion scam? What the hacker will do once they have resumed operations in your environment, you have your data back, they've promised not to sell your data on the dark web, they will then offer to live in your environment in perpetuity and collect from you a monthly check, right? Monthly protection money. This is very mafia style. In exchange for this monthly subscription fee, they will continually not sell your data on the dark web. They will allow you to maintain access to your database, your production environment. And in some cases, they'll actually offer you defensive capabilities. They will live in your network and they will help fight off other cyber criminal groups who would like to come in and conduct exactly the same ransomware campaign. This is the brave new world that we are living in 2022, when the line between what is an antivirus product and what is a Russian cyber criminal gang has become blurry. Sadly, I've seen many companies and entities fall for these triple extortion scams, where they are now paying in perpetuity to have these actors live in their network and help defend them while not re-encrypting their data. Now, when we think about ransomware, there are a few things that we want to consider here. Now, cybersecurity in general is a perfect example where an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. We don't want to be in a position of having to pay that ransom. I can tell you, I never recommend paying. But in those circumstances where you might be inclined to pay because you want to get your systems and your data back, wanting to prevent these ransomware campaigns becomes absolutely paramount. And the most important thing that all of us can do to prevent a ransomware attack in the first place is, first and foremost, to avoid those phishing emails, not clicking on links and downloading attachments, but also keeping all of our systems fully patched and up to date. And when I say a patch, all I mean here is the software updates that all software manufacturers are constantly sending you. So these are the updates to your phone, to your desktop, to your tablet. all software manufacturers are constantly discovering new flaws, new bugs, new vulnerabilities in their code. They are fixing those vulnerabilities and they are sending to us as consumers that fix in the form of that patch, that software update. And when that patch is released, that is the most critical moment because we enter into a race condition with the hackers. For us, that patch, that software update is the solution to the security vulnerability we didn't even know we had. But for the hackers, that patch is an opportunity. The hacker is going to attempt to reverse engineer the patch, discover the underlying vulnerabilities that it mitigates, and weaponize those vulnerabilities against those who have not yet patched. That means the onus is on us to make sure that our environments are patched quickly and comprehensively so that we are effectively immunized against those vulnerabilities before they can be used against us. But what if everything goes wrong and we have an employee who clicks on a link, we end up with a desktop that doesn't get that security patch, and we find ourselves victims of a ransomware campaign? And what we're going to want to do to avoid paying that ransom is to have our production systems, our data fully backed up. Now, I can tell you, we prefer a 3-2-1 strategy that you want to have 3 copies of your data, your production environment. You want to have those copies in 2 different geographically dispersed locations, and you want one of those copies to be physical, right? Not to require you to be on the grid. So in the event of a major power outage, you've got a physical copy of your data that you can take with you wherever you need to go. That 3-2-1 strategy can go a long way, but equally important, we want to make sure that we've actively practiced restoring our operations from backups. All of you business owners in Houston, go to your IT teams, have this conversation with them. I see it all the time, sadly, with our customers, our clients. They will swear to me, Rachel, hand over heart, my data is backed up. And when they experience that cyber bad day, that's when they discover that the backups don't exist, that the backups are corrupted, that no one knows how to actually reach the backups and use them to restore business as usual operations. On a quarterly basis, we strongly recommend actually going through the practice of restoring from backups so that you know you can do it when you need to, and so that your organization has the muscle memory on how to actually restore from backups. That practice alone can make a 3-week outage, a 3-day outage, and ideally a 3-hour outage in the event of that cyber bad day. Now, of course, people tell me all the time, Rachel, I'm not worried about ransomware because I have cyber insurance. I would tell you, cybersecurity insurance, we think, is a key component of any good cybersecurity strategy, but it by itself is not enough. Why? Because in many, many cases, we've seen cyber insurance companies just walk away. And in fact, when you look at the stats for last year, in only about 40% of cases, did that insurance company actually pay a dime in the event of that cyber bad day. Why is this? It's because if the insurance company can prove some element of gross negligence on the part of your IT department, they will, in the same way that if you were to light a fire in your own house, your insurance company would not pay, they're going to use that same logic in the event that you perhaps were not meeting the terms and conditions of your insurance policy, not patching in a timely manner, not conducting the employee training that is required in your policy. And of course, now you see legislation pending with Congress that would actually make it illegal to pay a ransom, which on the face of it makes sense, right? The more we pay these ransoms, the more we incentivize globally these kinds of cyber activities. But it won't surprise this audience to know, Susan, that it's actually the insurance companies that are behind this legislation. They've been paying through the nose these last 2 years, and they want to get to a place where that is no longer a requirement for them. And that, of course, brings us to our third R of 2022, this idea of resilience. So this is resilience to Russian cyber attacks. This is important to us as individuals. It's important to us as business owners, as board members. It's important to us as Americans, right? We don't want to be in a position where we're unable to recover from a Russian cyber attack. Equally important, we want to be resilient and able to recover from these ransomware attacks. Ransomware losses last year topped $20 billion just in the United States alone. And unfortunately, we are already on track just now in the second quarter of 2022 to set a new record in terms of both local and global losses financially to ransomware campaigns. having that resilience is a great way of making sure that we don't have to pay that ransom, because again, we've practiced the process. We have demonstrated that resilience. And I want to close today with some cybersecurity best practices, some things that we can all be doing to be safer citizens on the internet, and especially during these very unsettling times of geopolitical tension. First and foremost, we talked about the importance of staying fully patched, making sure that you're downloading that new operating system, that new browser, that new app for your phone, never relying on those old legacy platforms, always on the most fully patched. Very, very important that we be using unique, complex passwords. Now, I know, smart women in this audience, that none of you are using the same password everywhere all the time, because you know that when we use the same password everywhere and it gets compromised anywhere, we're now at risk every place that we've used it. But lots of people tend to do this. Passwords are a pain. So what do we do to make sure that we're using strong passwords? Well, I definitely recommend using a password manager app. These are apps out there like LastPass, Dashlane, Keeper, 1Password. The tech behind them is all largely the same. What they do is create for you unique, complex passwords for all of your logins. And then they store those passwords for you in a cryptographically sound way, so in an encrypted state. Then when you need to access those passwords, they will autofill right into that password field for you. You don't have to remember the password. It'll show up in that field based on either a passphrase that only you know, or even better, that biometric on your phone. Why do we love these password manager apps so much? Well, first, they're going to give you a unique, complex password for all of your logins. No more using the same password everywhere. They're going to give you a password that is maximally lengthy and complex. So if it's a 50 character password field, they're going to give you a 50 character password that fits that field, random alphanumerics that we as human beings couldn't come up with, but that computers are good at generating. But it's actually the storage of your passwords that I like best. Any of us today who are storing our passwords on a notes file on our phone, in a Word document or Excel file on our home computer, maybe my least favorite, that post-it note under your keyboard, these are not good places to be storing our passwords. We want to be leveraging the government-grade encryption that these password manager apps give us, that encrypted storage, much safer way of doing business with the internet. And then finally today, sometimes folks find it surprising that, you know, 20 plus years in the cybersecurity space, this is all I've ever done. And I do all of my personal banking and investing activities online. I use Morgan Stanley Online, the Morgan Stanley mobile app, and I work with my Morgan Stanley financial advisor. Why do I do this? Well, first, of course, I have high confidence in Morgan Stanley's cybersecurity practices, but it's mostly because of the risk around physical paper. And we really saw this manifest itself at scale during the pandemic. When we look at the fraud that customers experience broadly, we could do away with almost 70% of it by simply getting rid of two particular pieces of paper. The first, no surprise, paper statements. People who have those statements stolen out of their mailboxes before they receive them, who throw them away without shredding them. God love them, the clients who are keeping every single paper statement we've ever sent them since the dawn of time in a large unlocked filing cabinet in their home office. All of us underestimating the number of people with physical access to our homes over the course of the year. All of those statements, all of that paper really represents a tremendous amount of risk and liability. The other piece of paper we want to get rid of, personal checks. Personal check fraud during the pandemic was at the highest levels that we had seen since the early 80s. Multiple notices put out by the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI around the risk of personal check fraud. Why were things so stratospherically bad during the pandemic? It's because of social distancing, right? Many of us who under normal circumstances would have gone to church on Sunday were not going to services but we're instead mailing that donation, that contribution in the form of a personal check. And sadly, we saw dozens of examples around the country of fraudsters literally standing at the mailboxes of churches, waiting for that mail to be delivered, pillaging the mailboxes for those personal checks, taking them to other banks, having them printed, rebranded, washed, deposited, all kinds of check fraud in this space. When we do our money movements online, we have all of that digital forensic protection, all of those back-end analytics supporting us, and we're not incurring all of that risk around physical paper. So again, counterintuitive, but especially in this day and age, our safest ways of doing business can be all of the things we're doing with our phones and our laptops, as long as we're taking those best practices, keeping them fully patched, using strong, secure, complex passwords, and being savvy, right, about not clicking on links and never downloading attachments from unsolicited emails or text messages, exchanges that you might receive over virtual meeting platforms, great ways to keep ourselves safe. So with that, again, Women of Houston, I cannot wait to see all of you in person and hopefully not very long. Bear in mind our three R's for 2022, Russia, ransomware, and resilience. Be well, stay safe, and thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you for watching the Global Business Women's Pod, brought to you by the Greater Houston Women's Chamber of Commerce. We cannot wait to see you next Thursday at 6 p.m. And remember, you can always find us at ghwcc.org.